Hello, I'm Neil Shett.
And I'm Katie Holmes, and this is Don't Do That, Do This, brought to you by the British Chamber of Commerce, Dubai. We're showcasing Middle East growth stories to help companies that are in the UAE already, or those looking to come to the UAE.
And today we have Chris Miller and Kate Markham. Chris is the founder of Incremental, empowering individuals and businesses to identify the incremental steps to get there. And Kate is the founder of Think Smart Software, an online class management and booking system for children's activity providers. Chris set up his business around 4 months ago, and Kate just set up her business 3 days ago in Dubai. So this couldn't be a better time to speak to both of them. We're going to be talking about setting up a business in Dubai. I know there's a lot of people interested in registering their business in Dubai, so this is going to be a relatable and a deep dive.
So to hear this episode and all of the other episodes that we'll be uploading, you just need to follow our social medias and go on to YouTube. And also, we want to hear from you. If there's a story that you've got that's particularly burning that you want to share that will help others looking at the region, or indeed there might be a guest that you think that we can maybe get on the show, we'd love to hear from you. So you can just email us at the British Chamber of Commerce Dubai. Thank you.
This podcast wouldn't have been possible without the following teams. Rightfully for storytelling and thought leadership. Studio Red for the quality podcast studio and video production. And Sherbet Lemon for branding, social media design and editing.
Welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Dubai Don't Do That, Do This podcast. And today we are discussing setting up a business in Dubai from various angles, whether based in Dubai already or from the UK. Before we get into the detail of all those questions, the first question we'll ask you is, and I'll come to you first, Kate, what's your favourite biscuit?
Custard cream.
And why would that be? Is there any reason why?
I'd like the middle bit, the creamy bit in the middle, and yeah, no big story about it or anything like that. And I just, they're my favourite biscuit. Thank you so much.
You take it apart to get to the creamy bit.
I don't, but I do dip it in a cup of tea. Lovely, yeah.
I used to do the taking apart. That was the best bit.
Did you? Yeah. A lot of people do that with Oreos, don't they? Separate them, and process. I keep it whole, and I like to dip it in tea.
Very nice. Enjoy that later.
Thank you so much.
And Chris, what about you? What have you got there?
So chocolate hobnobs, number one biscuit, yeah. In my opinion, of all the biscuits. So I think...
Trying to climb the calories up.
Yeah.
This leads nicely into your business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This topic is not about wellness and well-being.
No, they're great. You get the sweet and the savoury. It's a good dunker as well. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Very nice.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Really looking forward to this conversation. So we are talking about not setting up your biscuit, setting up your business. You're registering your business in Dubai. It's a hot topic. I'm often asked since I've moved here with the family, where did you set up? You know, what did you consider? I was asking the same questions myself, and I found a really cool stat recently. Over 30,000 new businesses registered in Dubai in the first half of 2023.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the UAE is very much open for business. It's a safe option for families, and it's much easier. And Chris, you'll probably be able to go into this a bit more. Much easier to set up a business here compared to 20 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And, you know, when I first moved to Dubai, as mentioned, I had so many questions. And I felt like the more answers I got, the more questions I had. Get closer to the answer. So, but what I really valued was the real life experiences as opposed to reading this article from a company setup formation business or an accountant. And so that's what this podcast is all about, is to learn about your story around setting up a business in Dubai and hearing the considerations. So before we get into that, let's talk about your business and what do you guys do?
Okay, so I work for a software company called Think Smart Software, and we have various products called Class Biz, Dance Biz, Gymnastics Biz, and it's basically an online management and booking system for any class-based business. So if you imagine a swim school, for example, the owner of the swim school is passionate about teaching children and didn't sign up for the admin and all the back-end operations. Our system basically puts all of that into a box to them and they can manage everything from there. So it could be like customer and student data, timetabling of classes. It links to your website. You can collect parent and student information from there very quickly. Takes bookings, payments, all of that, yeah. So I'm passionate about helping children's activity providers in that area because it saves them time and money in their business.
And is it only children's business, so not gyms or anything?
No, it's yeah, any class-based business. It works best with children's activity providers because they tend to bill on a half-termly or termly basis. So it works in the billing process in that way. Whereas a gym, the classes are very ad hoc. So you know, it works better for like swim schools, dance schools, any children's activity provider.
Nice. It sounds like we could do with that for the podcast.
Yeah.
Just the booking
yeah, side. Yeah.
Maybe that's an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 5% equity. Yeah. No, for the idea. You heard it on this podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thanks for the intro. And how about you, Chris?
So I run a well-being corporate, an individual well-being company called Incremental. And what we do is empower businesses and individuals to focus on the big goals that will get the biggest change, but draw it back to what the incremental steps are that you'll take to get there. So what we're trying to do is look at where individuals and businesses struggle, where the friction points are, and really kind of draw it to the individual. Because, you know, for me, in every business I've been involved in, you know, businesses are about people and individuals. You know, I try to debunk this whole work-life balance issue, because for me there is only life and then everything else hangs off it. So it's you know, and nobody goes into work leaving all of their home stuff behind, and nobody goes home leaving all their work stuff behind, you know. And everything impacts on everything else. So it's trying to see what are the actual points of friction for people that are impacting the business they work for or the business they run, and then looking at the strategies, day-to-day strategies, that will help improve that.
I can resonate with that. Actually, so we'll definitely get. Yeah, I'm sure all the entrepreneurs and businesses are like, yeah, nodding their heads. So both of you just set up your business 3 days ago, okay?
3 days ago, I bought the license through, yeah.
That's amazing.
We're excited. Yeah.
So we've got it raw, and we're going to go into that. And 4 months ago for you, Chris.
Yeah, there's this latest iteration. Yes. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I've set up a business before here a long time ago. But this is the most current iteration.
Okay, perfect. So if I'm correct, Chris, you've set up your business from scratch within Dubai, UAE.
Yeah.
And Kate, you had the business running as a company in the UK, and now you've expanded out to this region.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So we've got like two different, slightly different use cases, because as we have both groups, you know, that we're going to be talking to. So really cool. This, as you know, there's loads of options around setting up a business in Dubai. I was actually speaking to Rakes just yesterday. So that they're a free zone as well.
Yeah.
And you've got mainland. So tell us your journey. Talk about your story behind setting up the entity, and what went in your mind when you were finally going, okay, this is the choice I'm going to make.
What was your first Google search?
How much does it cost?
And how does it that was it that straightforward that you just went straight for the first question, then really kind of scanning?
Yeah. And then we were lucky enough last year to get funding from the Department of Trade and Industry in the UK, which allowed me to come out on a research project for 3 months.
Wow.
So I was able to, you know, be here for 3 months and get involved with different networking events, talking to people and that type of thing. So that's how it started for me. And then as time went on, I could see that there was definitely a market for what the product I'm selling. And yeah, and now I'm here and got the license 3 days ago. And yeah,
that's amazing. So it's basically independent feasibility study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than just kind of taking a guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just coming out with a suitcase and a briefcase.
Yeah. I did talk to a client of mine as well, who spends a lot of time over here. And she's actually a creative consultant now. But I knew that she'd spent a lot of time in the UAE. So I contacted her and she did help with the strategy and everything with me, which was brilliant.
So that's the strategy from a business point of view. Okay. And then, because we'll definitely go into that. Where did you end up setting up your entity?
Where?
Yeah. Like, so within Dubai, you've got different free zones.
Yeah.
You've got mainland.
The Itsa free zone that we've got, yeah. So that I think the mainland means, the way I understand it, is that you can trade anywhere across the UAE. And then you've got your different free zones, haven't you, that are like little pockets across the UAE that you can trade from within that space.
And and it's funny, actually, because I feel just like that. So I've spent many months researching this topic. And even then, when someone asked me, what I just asked you there, I'm like, I feel like mainland, you can trade anywhere.
Yeah.
But then if you speak to different people, you'll get a slightly different answer.
Yeah.
And this is probably where a formation company that goes across the UAE would be really helpful. But when you went to, let's say, IFSA, what was the experience with that, and why IFSA, or was it because it was just, hey, this kind of makes sense?
The consultant I was working with, she then recommended a company out here in the UAE to help with the setup. And that's just the way we did it. So they it was a recommendation. They guided us through the whole process. It's been great, but there's been a lot of it is confusing. There's been a lot of hidden costs that we didn't expect at all. So I feel like when people say, I feel like it's a bit like the tourist mentality in the UK. Everyone's like, oh, that's amazing. You're going to go and work in Dubai. It's tax-free. Set up your company. I'm like, it's really not. It costs a fortune to set up a company in the UAE. In the UK, you pay, I think, what, £250 a company's house.
Yeah.
And that sets your business up, and that's that. Yeah. But out here, you've got the business license, which has cost us, and forgive us, because I'm going to do this in pounds, because I haven't quite worked out
to do it.
Yeah, still in UAE.
£1 million. I've been in.
Yeah. I'll take you back. Whereas license was about £5,000.
Yeah.
And then you have to have all these different documents attested, notarized. And I'd say that was probably another additional £2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So these are like little hidden costs along the way that we did as Brassel. Yeah.
Yeah. And is there overlap as well, where you have one document needs to be attested? Chris, from your last experience, you'd be able to tell us. What's the background in processing? Does it depend? Do you have to get one attested before another, and what's the timeline?
It very much depends on the free zone, what you're trying to achieve with it as well. But generally speaking, you're looking to it. So if you're bringing dependents, obviously you need to, you need to sponsor them, and you're getting some of their documents tested. From a business perspective, there are, especially if one of the companies that I worked, an attestation company, was a branch office from the UK. So actually a lot of the documentation there was needed to be attested. So it's very much like, is there, are you bringing a business here? And therefore, obviously, those documents from the UK need to be attested to show that they're legal for here. If you're setting up here as a, as an independent company, then you don't need that attestation. But then when you look at the individuals who work for that, then there's a lot of, their visas, their degrees, so depending on what kind of visa you're looking to get, as I don't know if you know this, but if, unless you're to be a manager, you have to have a degree that's been attested, and, and then if you're you know, like I said before, if you're sponsoring people, there's different attestations to do with that. But in terms of, you know, it's just either, is it the business, is it the individual?
So it might be a stupid question, but the purpose of attestation is what you just said there, is to prove that the certificates that you've received and the documents you received, let's say from the UK, are real.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I remember when I went through this and they said, was it my marriage certificate? It's like, I don't know where my marriage
salary was on.
Well, it's when they start asking about your birth certificate, you're like, I don't know what you are.
And then it was one of my child's birth certificate, and basically I had to go pay for it again.
I just left.
I think it was in some cupboard right at the bottom in my parents' house.
And different, you know, people from different countries will find the process is different for them. So,
So we've got an IFSA entity. So an IFSA is a free zone, I believe.
Yeah.
So how about you, Chris?
I've got a DD cafe. So it's it means it's a mainland license, but it's very cost effective if you're, you know, doing it by yourself, which, you know, is my case. What it doesn't give you is the visa. So then you need to be being sponsored by somebody. And I'm very, very lucky to have a very understanding wife. So I'm sponsored by her. But yeah, I mean, that process was literally go in with, you know, a couple of documents and sit for an hour and walk out with, you know, basically I've got my E license.
I'm imagining that, especially from a new business and your own business from a branding perspective.
Yeah,
I suppose you have to be extremely clear in your mind what your name is going to be.
Yes,
all the domain names are not. And what was your process in branding your own company?
I mean, for me, I think, you know, this, as I mentioned before about the company, it is very, you know, I when I was younger, I did a lot of endurance events, and it always stuck with me that as much as, you know, the idea is you get from one point to another, you only get there by taking steps, you know, and every step counts because every step gets you a little bit closer. So then when I was thinking of names, that kind of came up, but incremental as one word without the hyphens was already taken. .com. So then I...
Process of elimination then.
The hyphens in, and then it actually made more sense to me in that because of the way it's broken up. Yeah, but I mean, I looked at different free zones as well, but for me, the cost was prohibitive. And I know a few people who are, you know, what's the term, solopreneurs. And you know, they'd said how easy it was through the DD cafe. And there, you know, there are various parts of that, you know, that don't help, like not having the visa, obviously, you know, creates another cost potentially. But for me, I was like, well, okay, let's, you know, this is a process of getting this business off the ground. I just need it to be as cost effective as possible. And they were great, you know, and they're very helpful. Again, I think, you know, with some of the free zones, you don't always get told the full story straight away. I know somebody else who's gone through the DD cafe, and then when they've pitched for some business, that business has turned around when they've presented their trade license and said, no, we can't trade with you. But then talking to the DD cafe, that's that person's choice. You know, that business's choice is that they will trade or won't trade. From the DD cafe perspective, you can trade with whoever as long as
ever. Do they both offer, like you were saying about communities, you want them to get to know as many people as possible in your new setup. Do those setups have, do you meet other businesses? Do they connect to you?
And I can go on hot desk from there as well. Right. So that's good. I haven't done it yet. Honestly, I've only been here.
Where is it?
It's here. I think it is.
That's what I thought. Yes.
We're in the hood.
You could go and say I like it.
I meant that and say hello. But no, I haven't explored that yet. Because obviously I'm still finding my feet.
3 days in.
Looking for somewhere to live and all this type of thing going on at the minute. But I will do.
The WeWork is good. You know, that whole process where it's a community, but everybody's there and it's the hot desking. They live together. Like, they do so much.
Yeah.
You know, your mini ecosystem.
Yeah.
Which obviously the British Chamber of Commerce
devised. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah.
You just need office space now.
More office space.
But my first ever networking event was with, I'm going to say BBG, but I'm the A brand. And I met a girl there called Joel Barnes, and we've remained friends and I've done a few networking events with her now, but I took my first selfie on Instagram with Joel. It was my first ever networking event at the BBG.
Joe knows a lot of people.
She's really a serial networker. Yes.
We'll make sure this clip goes to Joe.
Yeah.
Got it. It's amazing.
Sure. Tell us about the costs with Didi.
So I think it was off the top of my head. It's split into two parts, but you'll have to forgive me because I can't quite remember. But it was about 1,700 dirhams for the license. That's
pretty cheap.
Yeah.
That's like there's 1,000 people joining last year.
You know, and that,
I wonder if they're still running. Yeah. You know, if you open a business, how limited are you? If you're just, well, not just, but if it's not a large investment, how invested are you?
Yeah.
Obviously, you are, but maybe out of those 13,000 joined.
Oh, I mean, you know, there, what's the stat on new businesses? Like 75% or something, they reach year three or something crazy, isn't it?
And I was just meaning Rakes, who's Russell Kyman. So to give some context, people will also look at other places around the UAE. And there's Sharjah, which is really popular, I think, for freelancers, essentially, because of the cost. And then there's also Rakes, who, and they were sharing some of their numbers, and it's crazy. I was blown away, just their monthly new registrations.
Yeah.
So 1,700 seems too good to be true. 1,700 dirhams or dollars?
Yeah, dirhams. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I've made a mistake here.
You are slightly limited in certain aspects of it. I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm very, very fortunate that, I'm in a position where I can be sponsored by somebody.
So the visa cut. So we should break this down. There's when you're setting up a business in the UK, it's let me go get a limited company. And I think what you said earlier, 250. Even that felt expensive. I think if you did it yourself, Chris style, you could probably go for £20 or something like that in the UK for a limited company. I'm just guessing. It's really cheap, like even £250. Whereas in Dubai, you've got free zones who will charge their own licensing fee, right? And then there will be a visa fee, generally connected, and you have to have both. And then there's mainland, and X amount of years ago, you could only get a mainland license if you went 50-50 with a local Emirati, right?
Yeah.
Oh, 51-49.
51 with the Emirati.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. So
companies.
Yeah.
And then they changed those rules. So you can now get a mainland license, which is a really big thing.
Yeah.
And actually, I just found out about the DD. So you can either go... Traditionally, you will go to a company setup formation, business, and they'll set you up and consult you and make sure you're making the right decisions. And then there's DED, this cafe over in, where is it over?
It's down near Jumeirah Mosque.
Yeah, around there. Yeah. And you can just book an appointment and have your company set up with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And and they're great, but they'll do both. So they can set you up as you get the visa, you do the whole company setup.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's literally just enables me to be, an official company, as it were, but it's only me. I can't have employees. Okay. I don't have workspace. I don't have the community. I mean, I'm very lucky because, I've been in the UAE 16 years. I've got quite a good community already. I mean, especially the...
You can say BBG.
G.
BCCD doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was.
We had this morning and I thought, I'm just not. Yeah.
We're in a transition period.
But, I mean, we're trying to do that for this podcast, aren't we? Like, don't do that, do it.
Yeah, yeah.
DT. Avoid the acronym.
Yeah,
no acronyms. But, you know, and community is massive over here, especially, I think, for people like myself who are working, you know, by themselves. I mean, you know, because otherwise I sit, you know, alone in my office, you know, trying to,
yeah,
you know, to do everything. And I think that's one of the biggest struggles when, you know, because it is cost effective, absolutely, you know, and like you say, you go in, if it's an hour, it's, you know, it's probably more than it actually is. But then there's all the other stuff that you need, you know, it's like, you know, and where do you find that? I mean, you know, stuff about VAT and, you know, I mean, how is corporate tax going to, you know, impact me as a business when I don't even know how much I'm earning at the moment, you know, at all. So,
but do you get an office as part of, you don't get a co-working space?
No.
Right? Like,
no.
Okay.
I can go down to the cafe and sit there if I wanted to, but, you know.
Well, you could just go to your local cafe.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. So it's not community.
No, it's not community.
And they don't force you to have an office?
No.
Or a virtual office?
No.
Because that's another thing.
Yeah.
When you're considering setting up a business, right? So you, whilst the listeners at this point might be thinking, let's go Chris's route. Actually, you get the co-working space as part of your fee.
Yeah. And the address there, so like a business address or anything, everything gets delivered to there. And then obviously the support of everybody else that's working there.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is key, I think, in Dubai. Networking and being on the ground is absolutely key.
Yeah.
And I've found that the people are so welcoming, so supportive. It's such a lovely environment to be in. I mean, I met a client, a potential client. The last trip I was here, she invited me to her house with our husband and our children there. I presented the software. By the end of that conversation, that presentation, she said, oh, me, my husband and the kids are going to Ras Al Khaimah next week. We're going to stay in a villa. Why don't you come with your daughter for the night? We'll put a barbecue on.
Yeah,
and I was like so blown away.
Mm.
Like you just don't get that in the UK. And every person I've spoken to, I've been invited to them. And I've always been fed or watered.
You did say earlier looking for somewhere to live. Is this the process, right?
I'm just gonna live in different people's houses along the way, but yeah, no.
It's good. So it's a common theme, and I felt it 12 years ago, and I feel it now. It's very welcomed, and the hospitality, and people genuinely really do want people to succeed.
One man going to walk
about that in a new country with whether you've got family or not.
Mm.
Yes,
and you've got to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people have a lot of empathy with new people.
Yes.
Yeah, it's lovely, really nice.
Good, you've had that experience. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I think about things here that I wouldn't think about in the UK when it comes to company setup and running the admin side of it. So, for instance, I've heard some horror stories about banking and accounting and now corporation tax. And I feel like in the UK, it's normal, right? It's corporation tax, it's just part of the flow. Is there something I'm missing?
Yeah.
You know, any experiences like that? That you've had?
I mean, I think at the moment, you know, the whole corporation tax is a big deal. I mean, I don't know how much I'm going to earn, you know, or even kind of really get. I mean, I know what I want, but whether or not that'll be achieved.
Those are on the pub.
Well, exactly.
And the new pub.
But I think it's finding out that information. I think that's where the networks really do help, and you know, and not to, I don't want to keep plugging you guys, but you know,
happy for you to do that.
I think the thing is, it is communities like the BBG where, you know, there are people who have that expertise, and it's not just from so now I have to wait until you know the next event where they're talking about corporation tax or something. It's I can approach anybody within that, you know, and communities like, I mean, I'm a member of British Dads Dubai, you know, it's another really good community to find out information
Yeah,
the Facebook group.
That's a Facebook.
Have you done the in-person events as well?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm on the group.
Oh wait,
I haven't done the in-person.
You should come. Like the next one's the 6th of Feb.
Okay.
And cool. Chris is brilliant. The guy who runs it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good group.
Yeah, no, they're nice. And again, you know, it's just that people want people to succeed, so they'll give you whatever information. You know, I mean, there's a lot at the moment about banking. So I'm a member of another group called the Excelsior Group, which is a lot of kind of CEOs and business owners. There's a lot of stuff on there about banking, about how WIO Bank is, you know, is being really helpful to small businesses and business startups. Whereas, I mean, certainly my experience in 16 years is it's, you know, it's not easy with the banks here a lot of the times.
Is that who you're with, WIO?
I'm. That's who the business will be with. Me personally, no. But you know, I mean, I remember years ago when I set up my first business, and one of the banks, I won't name them. You know, I went in to open a bank account, and you know, they were touting an SME, you know, account, but it needed 250,000 dirhams to be sat in the account at all times. And I was like, if I had 250,000 dirhams, like, you know, I wouldn't be here asking for an account. So, yeah, it was, I think sometimes how the more established organizations view small businesses is maybe not, you know, because this is a great place for solopreneurs. It really is. I mean, I think, you know, it's that land of, you know, milk and honey where, you know, you can, there is that energy and that hope and everybody's optimistic. But I think sometimes there's a slight disconnect to how big, you know, organizations then serve that.
I think probably there was a big lesson through the pandemic here of suddenly the spotlight was on the supply chain.
Mm.
And before that, there wasn't really that line of sight as to how critical SMEs were in this particular region.
Yeah.
And so through the British Chamber of Commerce Dubai, we do see that now, that there's a lot. I mean, 60% of our database of our membership is in the SME space.
Yeah.
But we can see so much more dialogue now and recognition for the role that consultants, yeah, and SMEs play in the entire economy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's understandable, right? You know, big corporations, you know, they're like tankers. You know, they take a long time to turn. Whereas, you know, when you're dealing with a economy that's based quite a lot with, you know, small businesses, entrepreneurs who are moving quite quickly, there's always going to be some lag,
yeah,
you know. But I think what's, you know, what I love about here is that when they see a problem, yeah, they can do something about it. It's, you know, and that can happen really quite quickly. Whereas, you know, I mean, I couldn't have done what I'm doing now 16 years ago when I got here.
Mm-hmm.
It would just, I mean, when I set up my business, I mean, it was really expensive.
Do you remember how much?
I mean, all told, probably around the 40,000 dirham mark.
You know, so to around 10,000 pounds.
Yeah. So, and again, you know, that was me. I was, you know, as a personal trainer.
But I was around that, so, well, 12 years ago, I was looking at freelancing myself, and it was the same thing. And I noticed that it was exactly the same cost for me to set up as a shop.
Yeah.
And so there was no differentiation about, you know, who you were, what size you were. It was just, do you want to set up a company? Yeah. Then this is how much it is. Very, very daunting.
And now you can get a freelance visa as well.
Yeah.
So, and actually that's one thing just to add before we go to UK is, depending on the nature of your business, the cost will increase, decrease, right? So when you're setting up in the UK, it's almost just for information. This is what I do. But actually here, within your license, I forget the term. Maybe it's the activities. The activities.
Yeah.
You have to list and state the activities of your business, and you have to stick to that.
Yeah.
And when you invoice a client, they will make sure that your activities are in line.
Yeah.
With the nature of your work.
And I think it can have, is it three activities per?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh.
So that's another consideration. How about you, Kay? Any interesting stories?
In your 3 days of 3 days of being here.
Any unexpected bills?
I've had.
Nice segue.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I
didn't know that.
I got an email this morning for another bill of 1,700 dirhams for my visa. So basically, if I'd applied for my visa from the UK, that would have been fine. I wouldn't have had that bill. But because I'm here in the country on a tourist visa at the minute, trying to set up my visa, there's this change of the type of visa it is. So from a tourist visa to a work visa. So now, I've just been hit with that bill at 1,700 dirhams this morning.
So the bill's come through IFSA, so that you know that it's not a scam.
Yeah. No, there's a scam. No, there is.
Yeah, maybe we can look at it live on this podcast. Yeah. Can assess it. So what you're saying there is, would that bill have happened anyway? Because you're switching from tourist to now, you would have had to get a visa.
If I'd been in the UK, apparently I wouldn't have had that bill. But because I'm here and they've got to change it.
Yeah. That happens when family come over. If they want to extend their stay, often we'll say, extend your stay outside of country. Because the moment you come here and you extend it for an extra month, it's extortionate.
Yeah. Do you just tell them that?
Was it?
No, it is. That's a good tactic. Don't you wonder?
Yeah. You have to be out of here for at least a month.
But and you know that 10 days grace period? I no longer exist. So that was your...
I feel like there's been a lot of little costs like that along the way that have been thrown in. But it's like any business setup, isn't it? There's always teething problems. There's always things that you didn't plan for. But I feel like there's a lot here.
Yeah. Have you chosen your business bank account?
With Wio.
With Wio as well?
Going through the setup of that, and that has been really fast.
Yes, it's had really some really good feedback. Yeah. It's an online banking app that was launched. I think it's launched by Abu Dhabi. But
It's backed by Abu Dhabi.
Yeah. It's very...
I was waiting for my visa so I can upload that, and then that's everything done. Literally didn't take long at all.
How was the response, friends and family, when you said you're moving here away from just Newcastle?
So I've left my youngest daughter, Maya. She's at Manchester University studying events management. And when I decided that I was going to make the move, obviously I spoke to her and was like, what do you think about it? Do you think it's the, are you happy for me to kind of make this move? And she went, Mom, Whitley Bay or Dubai? Have you been? You've just got to go and do it. And
and Newcastle are also losing at the moment.
Yeah.
The Premier League. So it's a good time to get out.
Yeah, because to the investors. The rest of the family, mum and dad and friends and stuff have been great. So I had a little surprise leaving party before I left, which was nice. Yeah. And then my team, obviously the whole team that I've worked with in the UK, they've been really supportive and stuff as well. So yeah.
And when you made your location, quite straightforward. Did you come with just a bag, or have you got a container stuck somewhere?
No container stuck anywhere. I did bring lots of shower gel because it's really expensive here, isn't it? And tea bags, Lauren said. Bring tea bags, man. Coffee. You know, it's like as if there's no shops here or something. It's been absolutely fine. I've moved in with her. Yeah. She lives on JVC, and then we're looking for some islands.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck. These biscuits cost like £10.
But you, Chris, with your 16 years into the UAE, do you miss parts of the UK, or do you manage to get back quite a bit?
No, I have to say no. I mean, here feels like, but I've always been, had a kind of fairly strong wanderlust. So, we go back most years, the summer for a little bit at least. But again, the first few years we were here and we'd go back, and then you'd have, everybody wants to see you. So you'd end up traipsing around and it's no holidays. So, then it started to get a bit, you get a bit more, right, well, we'll be here.
Yeah.
If you want, you know, we've already done the traveling bit. If you could come and see us, that would be grand. But no, I, to be honest with you, there's not really much I miss about, and even less these days, I think. I think what, like I said before, what I love about being here is, you know, I mean, the sunshine's for one, it, you know, you feel safe. And, you know, there's always that optimism, you know, I mean, even during the pandemic, it was like, you know, right, this is what we're doing. And you just, and I love a good rule. So if somebody tells me to do something, I'll do that.
Compliant Chris.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, I just feel that optimism that's here. And when I go back to the UK, I don't, and, you know, I mean, a perfect example of that, my wife's sister, her husband, have just moved over with their two kids. You know, they lived here before, they're back again. They're going through the whole company setup thing, and they're having, you know, that you get told one price, and, you know, actually then bits start getting added to that price, and it's costs that you weren't sure, you know. But, you know, it's just a great place to be if you've got that spirit in you that wants to explore and wants to, you know, be part of something. You feel like that's, I mean, for me, I feel like I'm part of something with Dubai.
Yeah.
You know, you just genuinely get that. Yeah.
And it's positive.
Yeah, that's positive. Yeah, it's a really nice way to put it. And I think just on that note, there is a lot from the outside, this kind of feeling of FOMO. And it's, we're sitting in a region outside of the UAE, and they can see everything happening here. The glitz, the glamour, the nice weather, the sun, you know, all of that really helps.
Yeah.
But, you know, being on the ground, there's another side to it.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of...
traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah, did all traffic.
Yeah.
There is this whole conversation about setting up a business in the UAE, right? It can sometimes feel like you're walking up the stairs of the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
Right? So let's talk about what went through your mind when you were considering, I guess, with UK expanding out here, mm-hmm. and then we'll go to you, Chris, mm-hmm. around actually setting up the business and going, yeah, let's do it. So what was that 3 month? Did you say it was a 3 month?
Yeah.
Period, like that research. Break that down for us.
So, okay. I'm gonna go back a little bit, if that's all right. So in 2010, I lost my husband, two girls. So then I was single mum, bringing the girls up. I also lost my house, so I couldn't afford the house anymore because the financial impact of losing my husband was huge. But I wanted to stay in the home because I wanted to stay in there for the girls, because I thought that's where the memories are of their dad and for me and everything at the time. So I did. I stayed in that home. I ended up getting what in the UK is called a mortgage rescue. Mm. So what happens is you rent it back, and I stayed in that home because I thought that's I was doing the right thing for them. So 3 years ago, Lauren decided, that's my eldest daughter, that she was going to up and leave and come out here and be a teacher. That's what she wanted to do. Maya left. She went to Manchester University. So then I was left on my own in the home. And I feel like I've probably been very suppressed in that environment for a long time now.
Yeah.
I hadn't realised it until I got the opportunity to come out here for 3 months last year. So when I was here, I just started to feel really elevated, really happy, like going back to all the positivity and everything that is here. So for me, that was it. I thought, yeah, I've been in the wrong environment for too long. And I was going on Zooms with my team in the UK, with my daughter, and everyone was going, "Mam, you're glowing, you look so happy." And yeah, so it's kind of what propelled us to,
well, I was a bit here, and I remember you coming, and thank you for sharing that personal story as well. I remember you coming to one of our events. I think it was one of the first events that you came to. And I remember just thinking, I didn't know that about you.
Uh-huh.
I just thought how brave you were coming to a room. I mean, it was also an all-female event, but it wasn't for everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, straight away you were chatting and a perfect opportunity to sit and mingle.
Yeah.
So well done for doing that.
Thank you. I think it was just because I just feel so much more confident and so much more happy here.
And the UK, I feel, is controlled by the media. It's very negative all the time, whether it's the news, the newspapers, social media, people complaining about the cost of living crisis, which they've got every right to. But when you're fed that every day, drip fed that on a daily basis, I feel like, you know, it's a really negative space to be in. And but obviously I had the trauma of my husband and as well. So so coming here for me.
And you've got a team in the UK.
Yeah.
So are they physical or remote?
Physical.
Okay, so they're still physical, and then you've come out here.
Yeah.
So were they like, hey, which one of us are coming?
They actually were, I've got one of the team is coming out at the beginning of March.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
So you're like, bye. Okay. So as you go by and you come out here, so I've got a few questions actually. So with the IFSAR set up, you know, you've got a team. And so you probably have ambitions to have a team here.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's part of your thinking as well, to have the co-working, to have the ability to have an office and ease work. Because I think that's important when you're setting up a business in Dubai.
Yeah.
Is if you plan to be remote and you're okay to be remote, then actually in theory, it doesn't matter where you register.
Yeah.
Right. But if you have ambitions to have an office and a team, now you need to start thinking metros, links, ability for people to travel and a nice community. So that has to be part of the considerations, I guess. In terms of the research on the business side, so here you're talking about personal, you felt a connection and I resonate with that. You know, I immediately, once I stopped going to the tourist places, started feeling a connection. What, from a business point of view, did you see for you to go, it's going to work?
Well, I mean, it was all about the research and connecting with activity providers, looking at their websites, seeing that they haven't got, it's not the same as what we've got in the UK. You know, I feel like it's not as, the children's activity sector in terms of providers aren't quite there yet when they're onboarding, they're automating their systems, everything like that. I still feel like they're doing everything on paper, Excel spreadsheets, that type of thing. So it was a lot of research in that 3 months.
And in that research, what does that look like? Are you doing that from afar or are you going to meet them and doing it in person?
I'll go out, I'll go people in person. I've audited some of their businesses out here already.
Okay.
So.
And that's cold, like they don't know you. And you've just, how do you do that? Like, do you call, pick the phone up? And so the reason I'm asking.
That's how I do it.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is for someone that's going through that journey now, like practically, how would they do that? So it's the networking.
1,000,000% the networking.
Right.
Yeah. Every lead, every conversation I've had at a networking event is gone on to a lead somewhere down that line.
And because you've got a product that actually builds on their existing solution, it's an easy conversation.
Yeah. It seems to be quite a trend in our interviews and the podcast is actually finding the pain point. So rather than just selling something,
actually
looking for something that's either they're losing money or they're losing people or whatever. But yeah, as a parent, I can tell you there's a long way to go. You're going to have a dog for life being... it could be a lot slicker. And the point you've made before around supporting the people that are passionate. And you know, you want, as I was understanding, I'm like, playing it back to you, is you want that person that's passionate about teaching the children something to only focus on that.
Yeah, because that's my set my business up. Yeah.
So they will be, some of them probably don't even, and saying some, a lot of the same clients, some of them don't even know how easy you could make life for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you feel when you're speaking, is there any resistance? Is cost an issue? Cost is not an issue, no. So the cost of the software is the cost of one child's fees, maybe for a half term. So, really reasonably priced. Yeah.
And what's the smallest type of business you work with? I'm thinking about a dance teacher I know who does a class every week. And now she's doing more schools. Would she be relevant?
Absolutely relevant. Exactly.
She doesn't have an office. Is that fine?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
It's an online product. You can access it from a computer. You can access it from a mobile phone.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Let me do some lead gen for you then. I'll do some lead gen for you after this. She's got a really nice dance studio and she's trying to get into more schools, doing few schools. So I think she'll be a really good.
So she found that she started off teaching, passionate about teaching. That's what she wants to do. But over time, as the school builds, all of the work behind the scenes goes, and it becomes an absolute logistical nightmare.
I'm thinking actually I've got a really good friend who started a Pilates business from home, and she is excellent at what she does, but stopped because she couldn't handle the admin yet. So this is the solution that you can get, as they say, for another client for you then.
There you go. See, if you'd have been here, if you'd have been here about, how long has it been now? 5-6 years in it when they had my gym. I had a gym and I was in forwards.
Yeah.
It's the admin side of it that just
absolutely draining. Yeah. And they go out and teach there, you know, best part of the morning, evenings, the teaching on evenings when school's finished and, you know, after school sessions, that type of thing. And then coming home and having to deal with parent emails, communications, all of that.
What about, so recently, and the UAE has allowed teachers to officially become tutors.
Okay.
It was under the radar before.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone knows anyone that's a teacher, could they use this?
Yeah, as well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Mm.
This is why we invoice you after this.
I was going to say, you got a job. That is like an awesome.
Does the other expect it?
What about you, Chris?
How can we help you?
What other businesses are you looking for that we can bring?
who's your dream client?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, really, because I do workshops and programs. From set up to the end of last year, I did a lot of kind of workshops as case studies. And what I found was, from the feedback that I was getting from the people in the workshops, was that A, the workshops weren't long enough because I was doing like an hour, maybe two, but also that it was giving people just that breathing space to kind of step off the treadmill of just kind of going, right, go into work, do what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, go home, cook, you know, bedtimes, whatever. And it just enable people to kind of take, as I say, that step back to say, well, you know, actually, what is it that's important? Are there areas of my life that I'm just, you know, that I'm not enjoying? And is there something I could potentially be doing about that? And for businesses as well, because, you know, that sense of taking the brakes off, you know, is for the individual, feeds into the company in terms of productivity, you know, the relationships. And, you know, because I mean, I've got a workshop, a 3-day thing coming up soon, and that came off the back of some of the case studies. And what they were seeing is that the team that they've got is kind of working dysfunctionally, but, you know, there's no understanding of, well, is that particular person, let's say, you know, struggling at home? There's no, you know, and one of the things I worked with, I was very lucky to work with Transport for London when I was back in the summer. And one of the bits of feedback that I got there was that they just didn't know, you know, they work day to day as a team, but they didn't know the things outside of work that were impacting how they were reacting and how they were working, you know, within the workspace. So, I mean, for me, it's, you know, I don't want it to be just companies who are really struggling, but it's, you know, I think from when you look at everything that came out of the pandemic, you know, there's, I think people are starting to realize just how full their stress buckets were, you know, to then have that, all of that stress, whether you got ill, didn't get ill, were locked for, you know, away for hours along. And, you know, so it's looking at businesses who are doing okay, businesses that are doing, you know, better than okay, but also businesses that are struggling and you know, and looking at, well, why? So one of the things that I'm doing at the moment is putting together questionnaires and research that I could go into companies and say, right, we'll just do this and we'll see. And if there aren't any problems, happy days, right? You just crack on. You know, if there's not issues that I could help with, you know, from looking at individuals, then that's great. You know,
a free review.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So we'll just start with that and say, well, look, if there are,
issues, if people are finding that, you know, maybe they, you know, life balance is a bit out of whack, then you know, there are things that we can do about that. But I think a lot of the time, because when you're in a business, and I know what this is like, you are so in it,
yeah,
you forget to, and that's leadership teams, that's individuals, you know, within the teams, that's business owners, and you know, yeah, company wide. So, you know, I guess that doesn't really answer who it is I'm looking for.
Well, it sounds like everybody.
Yeah, you know, I mean, what I'd like to do, what I'd like to think, is that everybody can make life a little bit more enjoyable for themselves, and from that, everything else around them gets, yeah, better. And
much of boundaries plays a part in when you're doing those incremental steps
in terms of
for the individual. So when they're setting their boundaries,
yeah,
in terms of whether they're doing too much in one area, how do you,
like, I mean, I think it's very much about being aware. So one of the tools that I kind of use some of the tools from is a thing called ACT, which is acceptance and commitment therapy. And it's about accepting your situation, right? I mean, I think sometimes if you say to somebody, well, you know, how could we make your life better? You know, it's like, well, let me not go into work. You know, let me lie in bed and watch Netflix or whatever. But, you know, you have to accept that there are, you know, things that are outside of your control, and there are things that are inside your control. So a lot of the time, that is just your perception of the environment, and your, you know, so it's looking at what, accept your situation, you know, see what areas you have control over, and then commit to make those changes. And, you know, without getting too kind of, you know, into all of this, because I will just talk and talk if you let me, you know, I'm a big believer in Stoic philosophy, and a lot of Stoic philosophy is around, you know, like, you have control over your choices, and it's getting people to understand that there's almost, you know, it's a wasted emotion to get upset and angry and frustrated by things that are outside of your control. Because the thing that you do control is how you view and how you react to situations. And it's an ongoing, I mean, you know, and I don't want it to seem like I'm, you know, this perfect, you know, Zen person, because I'm terrible, I'm not. And if you sat in a car with me,
I was going to say road rage would test the best of us. Yeah, yeah.
But I think, you know, it is this idea that you do have a choice in how you react. Whether you believe it or not, there is always a choice in how you react to a situation. And a lot of what I do is around that. It's about shifting people's perception of their situation. Because I think a lot of the time, you know, going to work, you know, the boss shouts at us, you know, and we feel bad, and you know, and all these things kind of, and they just sit inside you. Whereas actually, you know, if you start to kind of look at, you know, where the control points are for you, you know, what's, I mean, and the thing I have to keep saying to myself every time I get in a car, let alone drive the thing, is, you know, no one is out there trying to kill me or, you know, make my life more difficult or make my life more stressful. And it's only my reaction. Like, I don't get into
I mean, there are some
the instances where, I don't know who you've upset. but I think, you know, it is that idea that, you know, my son said to me the other day, he's like, oh, I almost died. Mate, it's something. It wasn't about in the car. He wasn't driving. It's okay. But I was like, but there isn't, you know, you don't almost die. You know what I mean? There's no such thing as almost. You're either dead or you're not. So you get into a situation.
Yep.
In you know, I mean, I get angry, but nothing happens to me. I'm just angry.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't got into an accident. Somebody else has driven like it, but I don't know why they're driving like that. I don't know why I drive like that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes. But the only thing you have control over is how do you react in that situation, and how long do you hold on to that reaction?
So a phrase that really helps me if I'm feeling a bit sort of like down at the dumbness is, rather than I have to, it's I get to.
Yeah.
So things like on the school run, I've mentioned traffic a few times on this podcast, but it's really, you know, it's insanely busy out there. So instead of I have to go and pick up my daughters from school, it's that I get to.
Yeah.
So I have the luxury of I can drive a car. Yeah. I'm able-bodied that I can do it. And then it works on a good day.
Yeah.
But I did borrow this from something where I saw, and you can just do it in the house, even if somebody doesn't leave the house.
Yeah.
But it's even just turning the light switch on. So I've got electricity.
Mm.
It's really sometimes just the basic.
It grounds you, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the very basic. And I think Dubai, whilst broad its glory, there is constant FOMO.
Yeah.
And especially on social media. And I actually love being at home at the weekend, Sal, but there was a time when I would feel really like anxious if I wasn't out and about and doing stuff and keeping up.
Like it's hot, it's sunny, you know, in the UK at the moment, the sun's out, you're out. You're out.
Yeah.
So what incremental steps did you take to grow your business?
Ah, very good. I like what you did there. Wow. And so again, network is, as we've mentioned, has been massive for me. You know, it's literally all the work that I've got is from network connections or LinkedIn. I mean, I know the guys from Complete, Tom Smith. I went to one of his things that was put on by the BCCD, and you know how big LinkedIn is here and regionally, you know, compared to other places in the world, this is huge. And then you kind of have to be on LinkedIn. You know, we did some stuff in November for Movember. I mean, I was inundated by people wanting to help and offering their services, and then got work, you know, paid work off the back of that as well. So, you know, those are the steps. And for me, you know, I am a procrastinator and I do get easily distracted. So it is very important to me that I map out, you know, what I'm doing each day, each week.
On the growth side,
what
activities could you give us?
So I make sure that I'm posting on LinkedIn. I post both as the company and myself, telling stories, but also giving, value, because I think that's really important. I mean, you know, an old boss of mine once said, if you were selling something to somebody or trying to get somebody interested in they could say, so what?
Yeah.
Then you know you've not pitching it right.
Yeah.
There's got to be this kind of hook and interest and build an interest. So I think a lot of it, you know, and we were saying about how amazing Dubai is, et cetera, et cetera. And you brought us back to the point that you do still have to pay the bills, you know, and the bills can be quite high. And, you know, and there are hidden costs and there are, you know, you do have to go to work and you do have to be disciplined and you don't get to go down the beach every day.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you're really lucky.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people see here, you know, I mean, especially you come from the UK and, you know, everything's negative and you see here and it's all, so, you know, but it's still a place of work. It's, you know, life is, it still goes on. So I think, you know, for me, for growth, it is looking at, you know, it's the long term. You've got to build that pipeline and that's networking, being active in network groups. It is, you know, being active on social media. It is, you know, not being afraid to contact people that you don't know, you know, because a lot of the time, one of the good things is that, you know, with those connections, you might not know that person, but you do know somebody who knows that person.
Yes.
And it's second degree connection. Yeah. And I think, you know, like you were saying, Katie, earlier, everybody wants to see you succeed. I work in a really, really saturated sector, as I am finding out. And maybe I should have done a bit more research. But, you know, there is still business for me. There's still a livelihood to be got from that. But it's hard work, you know. And that's the big thing about setting up a business, especially, you know, solo, SME, whatever. It's hard work. Every day, every single day, it's going to be hard work. And if you think, you know, you're just going to kind of to get a license and happy days, right? I think you really are fooling yourselves, because it is a daily grind
And some days are good and some days are terrible and some weeks are great and some aren't, you know. But if you're, you know, there's got to be that pipeline and you have to make use of how it works here,
yeah,
compared to other places.
I think showing up is really key.
Yeah.
And I like what you said about LinkedIn, because everyone, I think there's some crazy stats about LinkedIn's reach within this region, that 100% of people in this region are LinkedIn. And it's insane.
Yeah.
And I think you can show up at scale on that platform.
Yeah.
We actually had a client, a customer of ours, because we're in that space. And he said to me 2 days ago, he said, Neil, we target both buyers and suppliers, and the ones that pay our bills are obviously the buyers, but I don't believe they're on LinkedIn, but my suppliers are on there. So we had this conversation. And I think this is all about like setting your own expectations and being realistic. And I said, okay. And he said, so what do I do? Because I know my suppliers, they really like my posts. It's educative, it's useful, and I'm happy with that. But the person that I'm trying to sell this to isn't on this platform. And I said, okay, so, but do you believe that one day, I felt like a coach at this point. I said, do you believe, actually that's an area that I'm trying to move to, is not move to in terms of as a business, but no, definitely not, definitely not going down the coaching, but I'm impatient. So if I've got an answer in my head, I'll just give out. Here's the answer, right? Well, I've learned that's not a good thing to do. So I'm trying to be indirect, which is against my personality. So I push myself not to give them the answer. So I say, do you believe that that buyer's connections within the company, either the employees and maybe on LinkedIn, said, yeah, I think they probably are. And I said, do you believe that if you ran some outreach over here or met them at an event, they might check your LinkedIn profile to see whether you're legit? I said, actually, yeah. And said, yeah, I need to be on LinkedIn, do more. So I think we can be really like direct sometimes around, oh, if I do this, I should get this. And if that doesn't happen, I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
And life doesn't work like that.
Right.
You have to be able, you have to push in every angle,
yeah,
especially in this region.
Yeah.
Right. Because everyone's pushing. Mm. This is not, people aren't sleeping in this region. If you're growing a business, you are growing a business.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, what you have to just get used to. So,
I mean, this Adam Ashcroft, so I do a bit of work with him. So, and you know, and he said to me, and I know he got it from somewhere else, and that person probably got it from somewhere else, but, you know, it's this idea of being, what is it, an inch wide and a mile deep.
Yes.
You know, you have to figure out what it is that you're doing, and you have to do it, you know, really well. Like, you know, but, you know, like we talk about coaching, I mean, there's a gazillion different, you know, yeah, types of coaches, you know, doing different, you know, even if it's like corporate, you know, or executive coaching, is, well, what type of executive and what sector and blah, 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 you know, and it's, so there is plenty of business out. I mean, I found this when I was personal trainer, you know, back then I didn't necessarily get the sense, because back then I think a lot of people, especially personal trainers, they'd like hold on to their clients for dear life. Like, they didn't want to kind of collaborate. They didn't want to, you know, if they couldn't handle a client, they'd just work more hours. But, you know, we were always like, well, if we can't help you, then, you know, go and see this person. You know, I still get people ask me who's a good personal trainer, and I'll still, you know, there are still people in the industry that I know are good, and there are, you know, so many more now who are even better, you know, or have filled that pool of great trainers. And it's just, you know, if you do that for people, it comes back, you know. I mean, that does sound a bit foo-foo.
No, it's true.
But I think it's referrals, right? I mean, you know, the whole karma thing is just referrals. It's you do that and something else comes back off a bit.
So true.
Well, we demonstrated today during the podcast that we got some referrals.
And really good birdie, yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you both.
Thank you.
And sharing your stories. And
congratulations on your new business.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been great having you guys. Yeah. Thank you. No, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope the listeners have got loads of value from how to, you know, those that are thinking about setting up a business in Dubai, where to register, what free zone, mainland, IFSA, there's DMCC, there's TCOM, there's loads of free zones. Then you've got the other Emirates. So I hope this has been useful. Add your questions. We could always do a follow-up So if you see this on YouTube, see this on any other channel, feel free to add questions. We want to make sure this is helpful. And I'm sure we'll bump into you guys. So thanks a lot for being here. And
thank you.
You are listening to the Don't Do That, Do This podcast. And we're going to now send an invoice.
Great.
Thanks a lot.